and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 567, and that's 2 weeks in a row for me. And, you know, joining me today, though, is another one of our great hosts, is Derek Cabrera. Derek, how's it going, man?
Good. What's going on, Skyler?
You know, it's just another warm day here in sunny California, so I can't complain. Actually, I think it's warm all over the United States right now. I think everyone's getting a bit of the sweats.
It is. It's been baking here in the Northeast, but... Yeah, hopefully next week it's looking to cool down to actually pretty good week next week.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at your pictures. I think you were out and riding, what was it, Connecticut?
Yeah.
And you had some sweltering heat out there, didn't you?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Not last weekend, but the weekend before that was, it was like 95 and just like all the humidity in the world. It was not, it was not ideal to be out there, but... Yeah, any time to be on a motorcycle is a good time. So
nice. All right, so for this week's show, we're going to be covering the World Superbike races from the Misano Circuit. As most of you know, it's pretty straightforward when it comes to World Superbike, but there were some good things to mention, so we're going to get to that down at the show. But before we get to that and the news, we had a review recently on iTunes from Hidden Jedi. Great name, by the way. He says, great guys, MotoGP, World Superbike, Real Road Racing, and BSB. Good to hear news and gossip of movement and the rumor mill, lol. I live in Ireland, and they've started supposedly on this new track to hold World Superbike round, and hopefully Johnny Ray will still be good. Thank you, Hidden Jedi. Now, I hope that they get started on that track. I'm pretty sure, out of all the tracks recently, Derek, I think this one's probably got the best chance of being built.
That's what it seems like. It'd be really nice to see a contract come to fruition. I think I was talking to Jim about this on one of the other shows, but like, there's like five or six races that have been signed on, and nothing's actually come to fruition yet. And with the Circuit of Wales, you know, as fans with that taste left in our mouth, I'm really hesitant to get excited about another track. The one in Ireland and also the one in Finland look awesome. So hopefully those get underway and, super exciting to see Johnny Ray in Ireland.
Right. The cool thing about the one in Finland, they had, Mika Kallio was taking pictures up there at the actual racetrack. So they've broken ground and started actually pouring asphalt. So that's really good. I think it's the Kimi Ring, I think, yeah. It's called, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah. So. And I saw those photos the other day. So they have asphalt down, which is really, really good. So I think they're on the calendar for next year, right?
You know, I'm not sure.
I think it is. I don't think it's 2020. So they got a bunch of work to do this year. But hopefully, again, we see one of those tracks come to fruition and they're as good as they look.
Right. They've got a lot of work to do this summer because I don't think they can work on the track during the winter in Finland unless they're doing rallycross out there. All right. So, Derek, why don't you lead us into the news?
So, to start off, we have some really terrible news, actually. William Dunlop, unfortunately, passed away at the Xerxes 100 this past Saturday. Dunlop is the son of Robert Dunlop, nephew of Joey Dunlop, both incredible... names in road racing who have met unfortunate ends road racing, and unfortunately William has succumbed to the same fate. I you know, my deepest, you know, sympathies and heartfelt sympathies go out to the family and everyone. You know, I know his girlfriend or wife was pregnant as well, so just everything is just, my heart sunk when I heard that news. It's really hard to swallow as a motorcycle racing fan, and just knowing the tragedy that family's already gone through, just to add that to the list is really tough.
Yeah, it's never fun. We also had in our local racing scene, we had a rider pass away this last weekend at our round in the AFM, and Jason Blanca, unfortunately, had succumbed to his injuries from a crash at Thunder Hill. So we want to pass our condolences on to the Dolan family and the Blanca family, and hope you guys get through this treacherous time.
Yeah, so, and moving on to some regular news, we have Repsol Honda. They've continued their partnership with Honda until 2020, so no surprise there. You know, great for both brands, great recognition. They've been together since 1995, I believe I saw. So it's been quite a while. But yeah, you just can't see it's Repsol Honda. It's not anything else. It's not Monster Yamaha. It's not Movie Star Yamaha. Like, that changes all the time. But it's Repsol Honda. That's what it is. So, yeah, it's good to see.
It's good for Red Bull, or for Honda as well, because that's some serious backing. And as long as they have Marc Marquez, I don't think Repsol's going anywhere.
Yeah, I know. Yes, all Spanish lineup for how many years now? So, yeah, they're definitely happy with what's going on.
Absolutely. Franco Morbidelli is going to try and race at the German GP. I believe he has a broken toe from his previous crash. That's going to be tough. I don't know. Do you know if it's on his shifting foot or on his braking foot?
I do not know which foot it's on, but hopefully it's on his braking foot. But, yeah, he can, you know, hopefully get a thumb brake if he doesn't already use one, at least to combat that. But if it's a shifting foot, that's going to be tough.
Yeah. A bit tough to see that with them, but good on him. We always say these guys are as tough as nails, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him get out there. And he might cut down on the amount of laps he runs during practice and qualifying, but show up on race day.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, the German GP is just a couple days away, and we now will be able to find out exactly what Danny Pedrosa is up to next week. We have confirmation that the sick team is going to happen, as you guys talked about in the last show. So now we get to find out if Danny's going to be riding for him or if he's going to bow out.
Yeah, no, me and Jim had talked about, we both think that he's going to retire. What's your feeling on this one?
In my heart of hearts, I think he's going to be on the bike, but I think Dorna might just be blowing up this press conference thing, making it a bigger deal than it is. But we'll see.
Let's see. So, Crash.net reports that Sepang have installed flood lighting around the entire racetrack to run night races, much like Qatar. And they floated the idea of maybe doing another MotoGP race there during the night. I would love to see that. I think the night race is pretty cool. And it's completely different than what we get to see normally. And Sepang is one of those circuits that's in a part of the world that's extremely hot during the day. So, it might give the teams and riders a bit of break during the night.
Yeah, exactly. You hit the nail on the head there. Just the heat that they have to go through. So if they could run it at night, and depending on, because basically they have a shower every afternoon, and if the night is pretty calm in general, that could bode well for everyone. Just the track condition as well as the riders not having to suffer in the heat there. So
being out in the swamp essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's been disgusting here in the Northeast, and it's only that much hotter and that much more humid over there, so I can't imagine, man.
All right, so Nicky Tulli will be back in action at the German round for the Moto2. After having his finger amputated, his finger was trapped under the bar during the crash at Assen, and I'm going to assume most unlikely it was probably his pinky, like many riders have had amputated.
Yeah, it's I didn't know that. I saw you put that here in the news, and unfortunately, it's pretty common with motorcycle racers. That's like a fairly common injury. I think Jorge Lorenzo has had a finger go off. There was someone, I forget the rider, who crashed during the TT this year. He had to have like three fingers cut off. Like, it's pretty gruesome. But the fact that these guys come back, it's been 2 weeks, and he comes back. So yeah, there's something else.
And then in the final bit of news, Vicente Perez will be replacing Livio Loy for the remainder of the 2018 Moto3 season on the Real Aventia Academy 77 team, they have announced. But this guy Loy, you know, this kind of happens to him a couple times now where he gets these rides and you see some sparks where he gets up towards the front and grabs the occasional podium and then just falls out. And I think he brings a lot of money to the teams with his original backing for getting into the series. And I don't know, where is he going to go from here?
I don't know. Maybe he goes the way of Carl Hanica. I think he's been doing a lot of world endurance and different domestic championships. I think, you know, Hanica had a wild card at Laguna Seca or a replacement ride in Laguna Seca. So, mm-hmm. You know, maybe something like that. But I think it's going to be hard for Loy to find another, you know, full-time ride that has, especially in the GP paddock. You know, he has some money and he's been getting them, and he's a race winner in Moto3, albeit a very odd race in Indianapolis. But yeah, I I don't know. I don't know. The attitude that some of the kids have, and sometimes with Loy, you know, he seemed like just like a genuine, like, excited kid to go get it. And then sometimes you see him on social media and you're like, what are you doing here? So
yeah, he did have some kind of off-putting bits about his personality. I believe when he was with the Mark VDS team, there had been some rumblings and grumblings in the paddock about how he interacted with a lot of the people on the team, which eventually led to supposedly his demise with the team.
Yeah, that's not super shocking to hear either, but we'll see. You know, hopefully he can get a ride doing something else, but I think it's going to be really hard for him to find something in the GP paddock after so many chances.
Right. So anyway, well, that's the news, everyone. Let's talk about some World Superbike qualifying from Asano. So in Super Pole 1, we saw the likes of Vandermark and Torres. Vandermark had been kind of struggling the whole weekend up into this. Their names were in there as far as, you know, Mercado, Raz Garayalu, Hernandez, Canepa, Jacobson, Ramos, Gagne, Rinaldi, and Andreazzi. You know, before we get too deep into this, you know, Jake had those two top tens of the goodness sake, and, you know, it's going to be good to see him if he could back it up here at this track, and he was definitely putting himself on the back foot here in Super Bowl and won, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, there's, at a lot of the European tracks, he's had to just learn them for the first time. I think Mazzano is one of them. I don't think he had the ride last year here. I don't think he had Red Bull rookie experience here, so just learning from starting from the ground up during the start of the weekend, which is frustrating because right. You see him have such success at Laguna Seca, and then he's struggling. You know, PJ's beaten him almost every weekend in qualifying, at least. So it's frustrating, and you know, you hear talks of the commentator saying that the ride is in doubt for him next year. Understandably right. So he just hasn't had the results to back it up. He hasn't had the Ben Spies season of coming over and winning everything.
That was an extremely high bar that he might have set when he came over the AMA to the World Superbike.
So I think it's going to be tough, especially with the results and the consistency that at least PJ's put up on a satellite bike, essentially. So,
right, they had I think it was the World Superbike feed commentators had offhandedly had mentioned that, you know, Cameron Bobier had even been kind of linked to that ride because they want to keep an American on a ride, and I haven't heard a whiff of that out here in the American media or anything like that. That'd be a complete shock as to him leaving Yamaha and going off to ride that bike, and that doesn't seem like something that's going to happen.
I think Asphalt and Rubber posted something about Cameron going to World Superbike on a satellite Yamaha because the GRT Supersport team is going to have a satellite Yamaha team in World Superbike next year.
Right, so, they're moving up.
Yeah, so they have factory backing, and apparently that's where Cameron's looking at. So it sounds like he is looking to go to World Superbike next year.
Right, yeah, because he had mentioned that, because they interviewed him this year, and they were like, well, what are your plans? He goes, oh, I want to get back to Europe. I've got unfinished business, and if I can get on a, you know, Yamaha, like a Paddy Yamaha, and I was thinking to myself, like, oh, he's selling himself up there, and he has ridden for that team in a fill-in ride at Donington, and you know, was riding as high as, I think, fifth or sixth before he crashed out there in the final turn, and then had a good solid top 10 in the second race. But I would love to see Bobier going over there. I think he's definitely you know, one of our, if not the best riders in the Moto America series right now, and you know, but I don't want to see him go over at the expense of Jake Gagne. I think Jake needs to be given more of a shot because, let's face it, getting put on the Honda, you're already at a disadvantage that you're a rookie to this series, but then on the Honda, man, that's like doubling down on that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I definitely think they need to give him another year. Just, you know, you can't have expectations of someone coming not knowing these European tracks and being like, oh, you're not performing? Okay, let's on the Honda, you know? I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see. But yeah, I think I'd be surprised if we don't see Cameron there next year, and I'm really excited to see what Cameron can finally do on the world stage. Because like you said, in Donington, he was running well within the top 10 in the first race. In the second race, he finished in the top 10. So I think that was last year. So yeah, I think that's going to be good. That will allow JD Beach to come up and continue that cycle of finally starting to get people over and do what Moto America's built to do. You know, it's taken 4 or 5 years to get there, but you know, that's hopefully what we're doing.
Right. And, you know, follow basically in the footsteps of what BSB did. You know, they got a couple of riders over. Those guys turned out to be great racers, and your Tom Sykes, your Leon Haslams, Johnny Reyes, right? And so the, you know, the BSB gets this notion of, like, they're the minor league, essentially, for World Superbike. We're going to pull the riders out of there because, you know, look at Alex Lowe's. I mean, look at all these guys that come from there. And if maybe we can get some of that pull, you know, get Cameron over there and he does a good job, they'll start to look at the riders who are riding around him going, like, hey, you know what? They do have some talent over there. Let's bring it on over.
Yeah, hopefully.
Anyway. And
yeah, definitely a little bit of a rabbit hole, but yeah, hopefully we can we can get Moto America.
You would never know two Americans were on this podcast at all. No, never.
Exactly.
All right, so to get back to the qualifying there, like we said, you know, Vandermark had to get himself out of the Super Pole 1 to get himself into the shootout for the pole itself. He was able to do that right there with Jordi Torres. Torres, though, wasn't... It wasn't looking like he was, you know, safe the whole time. He had a little bit of what looked like a mechanical issue. He started to smoke there on his hot lap, but it never seemed to come back during qualify, so maybe just burning off some extra oil. But those two riders set both, you know, quick times. They were substantially faster than everybody else. I think Jordi Torres was still, you know, about 6/10 faster than Leandro Mercado, who was in third in that Super Bowl session. So, you know, definitely these guys, you know, were looking to move up, and they did what they had to do to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, not a real shocker who went through. Not a real shocker that MV almost had a mechanical issue. But, yeah, then we moved to...
It wouldn't be a weekend without it.
Exactly. Yeah, and then we moved over to Super Pole 2. And, again, no big shocker here. We got Mr. Super Pole himself sitting on top, but just in front of Jonathan Rea.
Yeah, we're talking 3/100ths of a second there. And Tom Sykes, though, he now makes that 7 in a row at Misano. 7 years, 7 poles. That's quite impressive.
Is that better than his Donington record? Didn't he have like a stellar record at Donington, or was that just wins at Donington?
You know what? He probably has a lot of poles at Donington, but I think his wins was the heat. He did the double two years in a row, maybe three. I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah, I knew he had like some crazy record at Donington. Yeah, so
he is Mr. Donington, right? Put it that. Something else that was mentioned during Super Pole 2 was that they had new front tires this weekend. They're a little bit wider, more stable on the brakes, but you know, where you give yourself an advantage in one area, you take from another. And so it made the bikes a little harder to turn in. Johnny Rea was talking about that, where he was much happier with this bike going into the turns, which we've noticed for the first time this year and a little bit last year that the Kawasaki's had a bit of an issue getting into corners on the brakes. But hopefully, you know, he was saying this fixed it, just made it a little harder to turn in. But, you know, as we're going to find out, that didn't really slow him down.
Did they say the technical spec of it? Because in all honesty, I just watched the highlights for the Super Pole 2 session. But for the mm-hmm. for the tire, did they say, like, did they bump up to a 130, or is it still like a generous 120?
You
or
know,
did they just not get into it?
I don't think they actually mentioned the size. I may have also not have paid attention when they did say it, so somebody might be screaming at us right now, like, they said it was it, but, you know, I didn't catch. I just caught that they had put the wider tire on this weekend, but I'm sure it's not a substantial change,
because
that would just throw everyone into a loop, but...
Yeah, I mean, well, they did it, again, going back to Moto America, I thought, you know, last year they went from, like, the 200 down to the 180, and... Like, in the middle of the season, I just don't understand, like, how these tire manufacturers make such big changes, like, in the middle of the season. I think that's just with Moto America. World Super Bikes, I feel like Pirelli does it much more incrementally, and there's an allocation of, like, the development tire, which mm-hmm. is done a little bit better. But, yeah, once they make these, like, hard changes in the middle of the season, like, it can shake things up drastically. And I just think,
right.
like... Making those changes with the tires like in the middle of the season is just so bizarre. But Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, it makes sense when there's a safety concern. Like MotoGP, they had it, when the tires are exploding, when the heavier riders run it. That made sense, but I'm with you on this. Why make the change, especially if you're a spec class, just give these guys from the beginning? It makes it really hard for a setup, too. Like you said, it's the new tire is now giving Tony Elias fits, right? He hasn't quite found, because they did it this year, where they changed the Superbike tire, and now Bobier is doing good.
Yeah, because we went from a 255, now we're at a 255, and now we're at 260, so it's a little bit taller, and so it's like you're having these like drastic changes in the middle of the season, and yeah, like you said, it's a spec class. Like if the tire manufacturer wants to do development, give them a development tire they can try or test during a weekend to give you some data, and then make a sweeping change during the off season when you have time to test.
Right. I feel like if you want to introduce a new tire, you're more than welcome to, but keep what's been there all year as well, right? Have options.
Exactly. Yeah. Like MotoGP is different because it's a total prototype class. So every tire is going to be different from week to week. And that's something that's made the series incredibly interesting. But in a spec class, it just doesn't make sense to me. So that from a fan's perspective, I'm a little bit baffled and also frustrated because it's like it's creating these changes that I feel like shouldn't necessarily be there. But it's interesting. There are changes and people like changes in racing.
So Super Bowl 2, we had Tom Sykes on pole. Johnny Ray, it was just 0.03 behind him. And then Eugene Laverty on the Milwaukee Aprilia there in third. That bike is definitely making its way towards the sharp end of the field.
Yeah, much improved between the podium in Laguna Seca. You know, they finally have seemed to get past this late race grip issue, and the bike is getting better and better, more competitive, and we can finally see Eugene perform like we know he can perform. He's a world champion caliber rider, so if they put a package under him that's competitive, he's going to be at that sharp end. So that's super exciting.
And he's also healing up more and more each week too. So
I'm
thinking that's probably helping his progress significantly.
Yeah, and the 10-week break that they're about to have should get him back to full fitness before the season's out. So
absolutely. So then you had Chavi Forrest in fourth, Salvadori in fifth, Loris Baz in sixth, Davies in seventh, Belandri in eighth. Not the greatest weekend for Factory Ducati when Forrest is on a privateer bike beating you out. And then we had Jordi Torres in 9th, Leon Kammerer with the Honda in 10th, Vandermark coming up in 11th, and Alex Lowe in 12th. So both the Honda's always struggling, but both the Yamahas and the Ducatis not having the best of starts to their weekend here.
Yeah, you know, the Yamahas looked like they were really struggling. The Ducatis, I feel like sometimes them getting in a fast lap and working through the weekend the way the schedule is with World Superbike can be pretty difficult. You'll see them like really, you know, just day one is, you know, they have three sessions, they're trying to figure out what they have in the allocation, what they're trying to get out of the bike, and then by the time Saturday comes around they have one session and then Super Pole. So I feel like out of the box the Kawasaki is the best like base setup. It has to be. So we're always seeing them perform super well on Saturdays. And because of this condensed schedule with the race on Saturday, it doesn't favor the teams that don't have the best base setting, such as the Ducatis. The Yamaha's kind of hit or miss. Like sometimes it works super well out of the box, and other times it's really struggling. And this weekend we saw them struggle a lot on Saturday.
Right, and that reminds me of a few things I did want to bring up. Through listening to past shows and just, you know, general thoughts going through races, everyone's talked about the leaps and bounds the Yamaha has made in development, and Vandermark's probably sticking with them instead of going to the Kawasaki, so on and so forth. Let's not forget, though, that as good as the Yamaha has made its way forward, it's also because of the Kawasaki has been dumbed down. So if we're going to, you know, compare apples to apples, if he really wanted to be on a bike that was competitive, he would go to the Kawasaki, because the moment they start you know, not being able to compete, they just go back and give them their RPMs and boom, right back to the front. Whereas exactly. The Yamaha is still not quite there, and they're at an advantage compared to that bike. And, you know, everyone's been talking about, you know, Vandermark, he's now not going to get a seat, and Tom Sykes, you know, obviously with all the comments he's made about Paraíba and everything that's going on with that team, that he's definitely not going to be on that team next year. Chaz Davies was given an ultimatum. He's not going to be able to ride that four-cylinder Ducati unless he signs a contract. That's a big ask, because obviously this bike is going to need to go through development. The current Ducati is very competitive, but still missing something. And Davies, you know, of course, wants to win a championship, but age is going to catch up to him as well. He's not old by any sense of the mean, but you want to win when you can. And if he was to jump on to that second Kawasaki, oh man, you think weekends are boring now? It would just be Ray and Davies for the first five laps working together to disappear, and then the last five laps would race it up, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I would love to see Chaz on the V4 Ducati, but I would love to see either him or Vandermark on that second Kawasaki seat. I think that's what's going to really make World Superbikes interesting, is having two incredibly competitive and aggressive riders challenging Ray. At the end of the day, I think Ray would still probably come out on top, but to have a battle and to have something like that go throughout the season, so it comes down to the last race or the second to last round or whatever, but I just don't think Tom Sykes is at the caliber that he was previously and at the caliber to take on Johnny Ray at the moment.
Yeah, I think his confidence is a bit down as well, and I think, you know, maybe a bit of a change would be good for Sykes, because we know he's fast, right? Look at his one lap pace. How many pulls does he have?
So yeah, exactly.
It's just his racecraft hasn't been there as of late. I would like to see him, you know, I wouldn't even mind seeing him on the Ducati and seeing what he could do, just, you know, just for him to get a change, because obviously we want to see more riders to the front challenging. It's beat Ray at this point. It's the Johnny Ray Championship. Can you beat him on a consistent basis every weekend? And nobody can right now. Some weekends one guy can, some weekends the other guy can, but he's just going to wind up in second place, and that's why he's got this humongous lead already.
Exactly.
So we jump down in race one. Ray gets the whole shot. No big surprise there. But the big move in the beginning was Chaz Davies coming off the third row and almost grabbing third by the second corner, but Lafferty fought him off a little bit, and Davies had to settle for fourth. That was an amazing start for Chaz.
I think he's been talking to Jorge Lorenzo, getting some tips, right? Because that start, either Jorge Lorenzo or Miguel Oliveira, they've been chatting to Chaz, letting him know how to get off the line, because yeah, he just came out of nowhere. And by that second turn, which in Misano can always be carnage. I think Baz went down in that turn on the first lap,
he went
or
down
second
turn
lap.
Two. Yep.
But that, you know, it's always really hairy. So seeing him bolt up there and just get in line, you know, you knew he was something flipped between qualifying and the race, and he was ready to fight for it.
Yep. So by the third lap, Ray was already starting to pull away, and we can kind of see what was going to be happening in this race. And as Sykes, Lafferty, and Davies all kind of settled in this little pack, and then we lost Yanni Hernandez. He crashed out in lap four, and his season kind of continues at mediocrity. But Lafferty was hounding Sykes. So Sykes had a good start, and he started to pull the gap. So Ray pulled the gap. Sykes started pulling the gap on Lafferty, but then Lafferty started winding back down. You can see the gap closing and closing and closing. And as the bike was coming good for Lafferty, it was going bad for Sykes. But then we got to the point where, you know, we've been upping this guy for finishing in the points and finishing races all season long. So then, you know, Alex Lowe's had his first crash of the season, remounted, and then crashed again. So I guess he was destined not to finish the race today.
Yeah, that was it's always funny when you see, not funny, but it's kind of tough.
Particular.
Yeah, right. When you see the graphic of like crash two, you're like, ah, man, like, just, it's not your day. But right. Yeah, I mean, Lowe's had a spectacular season. He's taken his first win, and this weekend, this Saturday, was not going his way.
No, and he was from the onset was overriding that bike, and obviously, you know, led to one crash. Then his second crash, he just buried the front of the asphalt, and it said no more and let go and sent him off into the gravel there. But he was pushing. He was trying to get back some of those positions, but luckily he just was unharmed and got to walk away from it. And then we hit lap 12, and on my notes, I've just got a bunch of Z's, because this is when it turned into the superbike race for about, what do you say, up until about the last three laps, I think. It just, nothing.
Yep. Yeah, just big gaps between the top three, even in the back of the field, like nothing was really happening.
Yeah, it was like about a bike every 1.5 seconds went by the line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just far enough away to be like, it's not that exciting, guys. Like, what's going on? But yeah, you know, those couple laps left though. How many laps were left? And you know, Laverty made that mistake at the final corner, and that just let Chaz through. So that even wasn't all that exciting, unfortunately.
Right, because Chaz is running him down for about five laps or so. You can really see him start to wind the gap down. But as he got, of course, you know, closer, we all know it's easy to catch someone, hard to pass. And we were thinking, like, okay, they're going to get up there and they're going to slice and dice because Laverty wants to hold him in second place. And then he, you know, blew it wide into the final corner. Chaz went by, and he had a little bit more left in the tank than Laverty did. And I think we found out later, I think Laverty had a wheel speed sensor come off his bike or malfunction, which was causing him to... his electronics to be a little funky for him, if I recall correctly. But him getting a third, and then, you know, stop me if you've heard this, Ray went on to a dominant victory.
I have heard that before.
That led us into Sunday's races. Of course, remember, we always have the flipped grid, and it is interesting to see how long is, basically play the game, how long does it take Johnny Ray to get through the field? I think that's what we can kind of call this rule now, the Ray rule. It might be known later on down the road to help with.
Maybe they need to like have a Johnny Ray like exclusive rule and just like put him at the back of the grid.
All right.
And it'd just be like far more exciting for every race too.
What does he have to do? He has to do the Joker lap, so he has to pull into the pits and, you know, hit a couple chicanes inside the pits and come back out or something like that. I don't know. But we get out early, and Forrest gets the whole shot, and then, you know, like we were saying, it wouldn't be a weekend without getting a, you know, the meatball flag out there for Torres. Oh, Envy Agusta. Your bike looks so good. It just doesn't run as good as it looks.
Well, at least next year they don't have to worry about the engine, and they just need to focus on building the chassis and have really, really good looking bodywork.
Which, so, once again, you got to thank KTM for having the stones to go out there and not care about having to slap Honda on the side of their bike, because you never hear anybody call it anything but a KTM. And no one even, you're like, nope, the KTM is this, the KTM is that, the KTM is... Nobody ever talks about the Honda motor. And that might be why maybe Honda's pulling out of Moto 2 a little bit, because they're like, yeah, we make all these super reliable motors and no one ever talks about that.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah, and they have such presence elsewhere on the grid. Like, this is Triumph's one time to shine, and I'm sure they're gonna have reps at every race, and they're gonna make a presence in the paddock, and you know, that's gonna be their thing. But yeah, no one's calling it the Honda KTM,
right,
or anything.
Exactly.
So for MV to be like, we can do this, and we're gonna have a presence, and we don't have to worry about our engine blowing up every race.
And we might see this with other manufacturers that are a little bit smaller outfits, or they just don't have as big of an interest in motorcycle racing, but motorcycles in general. You know, a company like BMW, maybe they want to come in and take advantage of this because they can see that they can be at the top level without having to put that, you know, huge chunk of money in R&D. They can just worry about the frames out there for these bikes. They don't have to worry about the engines, that everyone's running the same thing. So it's a good thing to see, because obviously the more manufacturers we can get in any level of participation in any in all of these series is always a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, after that small rabbit hole, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is MV has a really good looking bike, and it just happens to break sometimes.
Yep. Speaking of breaking, Forrest was the next one to suffer a technical issue and had to retire, which was a shame because he was running up to the front of the pack.
Yeah, and he also had that technical issue in race one as well, and it was pretty early on in race two that he had it, which was pretty frustrating. You know, he had the Ducati outfitted, outfitted in the Tricolore this weekend.
He had
a really, really good presence this weekend, and it just did not work out for him.
No luck there. Now, in this race, we would get to see Ray and Davies have a bit of a shootout in the middle of the race. And something I did notice, that Ducati is not down on speed, that's for sure.
Yeah, not having the quite as much restriction as the Kawasaki on those RPMs, and just the bike itself, it definitely has some legs. So yeah, there was no Z's in the middle of this race. It was actually pretty interesting all race long, probably up until the very end. But super tight pack, and it took Ray quite a while to get through the field. I do have to say, like, it wasn't like two laps and he's gone. He was in the middle of the pack for quite a while.
He spent a long time duking it out with Davies, and that kind of gave, you know, Vanemark and those guys time to pull away. And eventually, Ray did, you know, finish up his fight with Davies and had the chance to run down Vanemark with about five laps to go. And Vanemark was holding him off. He was holding him up good. He made Ray work for it. And then Ray just had this move in the first set of corners there in turn two, where he would run it super fast during the corner and set himself up to where he can get punched through on the inside. And he was, you know, one of the only people that could do it. It was just this beautiful line that he ran through there to make the passes, and made it through there on Vanemark and got it through and then grabbed the lead. Now, and then Melandri in this race, he was right there. While Ray was battling out with Vanemark, Melandri was able to catch up and sit there in the back and was kind of waiting, you know, just so close. But then once Ray got back, kind of stretched things out ever so slightly, just a little bit. But Ray won it. It was one of the closest races this year, and especially for it was the closest podium we've had in quite a while.
Yeah, you know, everyone around, well, it was just about around a second, mm-hmm. was determined by the podium. So in World Superbikes, you know, this year, that's pretty good. It was pretty, I wouldn't say it was MotoGP ass in quality.
No.
But
that's special.
But it was certainly a race to keep you intrigued, you know, from start to finish. So, you know, it's positive. You know, I feel bad. I feel like we're really harping on World Superbike, and like I really do like the paddock and the atmosphere that it seems like the riders have, and the support classes as well. Like, it's super interesting, and I'm a big fan of World Superbike. But
oh yeah, I was a World Superbike fan before.
Yeah, exactly right. Like, this used to have the by far the better racing.
Yeah.
But you know, at the end of the day, it's tough to see the same guy winning all the time in such a dominant fashion.
Fogarty had the same thing. He came through.
Yeah.
That kind of but that killed the World Superbike a little bit as well. Well, he was doing that same thing Matt Milladen did.
Yeah, at least Foggy had like a good attitude about it. He was like, "All right, go ahead, hate me, right?"
Mm-hmm.
But Jonathan Reyes is like the nicest guy in the world, so it's like
you
can't even
hate.
Be like mad at him. Like, I'm not a huge Marquez fan, and so like it can be a little frustrating for me when he wins. But Johnny Ray just seems like the nicest dude, and I'm just like kind of happy for him. Pretty pumped when he wins.
He's earned it too, because he rode that shitbox Honda around for a long time, throwing himself into the weeds trying to keep up with everybody.
Exactly.
And now he got a bike that keeps up with him.
Exactly. So it's like, yeah, you saw him like on the Honda for years, and he from day one on the Kawasaki, like that was it. So you knew that the talent was there, and he definitely deserved all this. But it's frustrating from a perspective or spectator's standpoint to watch these races. But Dorna's gonna keep chipping away. They chipped away at MotoGP for years until they got the formula right, and the past 3 years in MotoGP have been fantastic, absolutely fantastic. So I think it's just gonna be tweaking of the rules, mm-hmm. figuring out technical specs. I think the hard thing is Kawasaki just has the most money to spend.
Yep.
And there's no one else coming close. So unless they basically put like a price cap, which I don't know how they would do that, but you know, it's gonna be pretty Kawasaki dominant for a while,
right? Or they just force them into MotoGP again, which that would see the significant budget get cut there. But that was the 120th win for Kawasaki. They're their second most successful manufacturer in World Superbike. I would assume Ducati's the most successful, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't I don't see it any other way.
Yeah, they had quite a years and years and years of dominating World Superbike. It was pretty much the Ducati Cup at one point, which is like every other bike was a Ducati. But, all right then. Well, good enough. All right, well, without that, I think we might conclude one of the shorter shows we've had this year.
I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, that's sometimes you got to get them in and get on with it. Got shit to do.
For sure.
But we have some races coming up. Of course, the Suzuka 8-Hour is approaching. And this weekend, we have the German GP from Sachsenring. This is where we're going to, like we said, we're all waiting to see what Danny Pedrosa's announcement is going to be. And can anybody beat Marc Marquez? He's got 9 in a row. Let's see if we can get him beat on that. I don't see anybody beating him, do you?
No. Not at all. Not even a little bit.
Exactly. All right. So don't forget, you can email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. You can also reach us on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/motopod. That is the Motopod fan page. Please like and subscribe for updates. We do post the show there. Sometimes when I actually get around to it, we do the rapid fire. I haven't gotten on that recently. But yeah, you can also contact us there. We're pretty active there. Direct contact with a lot of us. You can do on Twitter, and that's @moto_pod. You can follow us there for news and announcements. You can also get in contact with me directly on Twitter. I am @SkylarV28. Derek, where can people find you?
People can find me @MotoDerekC on both Twitter and Instagram.
Well, Derek, it's been a great show. It was great to do another one with you. I think I'm off for a couple of weeks. I still haven't looked at the schedule, what's coming up. I know we've got it's not slowing down at all lately.
No, it's not. But we'll see you next time. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. And we'll talk to you, listener, very shortly about Marc Marquez's dominance at the Sachsenring.
Adios, everyone.